When Bob Bennett wrote Logically Fallacious and launched the companion website, he thought he had given people the tools to spot errors in reasoning. What he learned over years of online debate and from thousands of interactions was that spotting fallacies is only part of the work. Identifying errors tells you when an argument is broken, but it does not teach you how to build claims that are strong, testable, and useful. The preface and opening material of Rules of Reason set out a different project, a practical guide to making and evaluating claims well. These are not laws of logic, immutable truths that cannot be bent, but rules of reason, flexible guidelines that, when followed, reliably produce clearer thinking and better discourse. Think of them like nutrition guidelines for reasoning, adaptable, improvable, and designed to keep you healthy intellectually, even as new information arrives. Bennett defines a claim simply as a statement that something is the case, usually presented without proof. Claims differ from opinions because they purport to state objective facts rather than value judgments. A claim can be true or false independent of who utters it, and its strength is judged not by whether it happens to be true, but by how clear, precise, and testable it is. That distinction lies at the heart of this book. A strongly worded claim, "A living unicorn is in my bedroom," can be a strong claim even if it is almost certainly false, because the claim is clear, specific, and falsifiable. Weak claims hide in vagueness, ambiguity, and rhetorical sleights of hand. They invite wasted energy, countless hours arguing over claims that were never properly stated. Bennett organizes his rules into three broad phases that mirror the healthy habits of thinking: know thyself, disambiguate, and embrace the continuum. The first phase teaches humility and psychological self-awareness. Most errors begin not with logic, but with the thinker. Rule 1 asks you to acknowledge the limits of your knowledge. The internet has empowered many to feel like experts after a few hours of research. The Dunning-Kruger effect explains why this tendency to overestimate competence is so common. Without knowing how much there is to know, you cannot gauge how much you actually know. Admit it. When you recognize this bias, you are more likely to defer to genuine experts and less likely to dismiss useful information just because it comes from an unlikely source. But the companion error is the genetic fallacy, dismissing a claim purely because of its origin. Bennett cautions that while source credibility is a useful heuristic, it is not decisive. Reliable sources are sometimes wrong, and unreliable ones are sometimes right. If you have the time for careful evaluation, test the claim on its merits first. If you need a quick heuristic, consider the source, but don't blindly rely on it. Rule 2 deepens the inventory of self-knowledge. It asks you to explore your biases. Bennett uses his own life as an example. Raised Catholic, confronted in high school by an atheist friend, he realized how powerful motivated reasoning is. When what you believe feels existential, when you are convinced that disbelief implies eternal punishment, reasoning becomes less about truth and more about psychological self-defense. Motivated reasoning colors our search for evidence and our interpretation of facts. Then come cognitive biases that operate more subtly and systematically. Confirmation bias makes us select news sources that confirm our views and forget those that don't. Courtesy bias makes us agree with a friend to be polite, inflating apparent consensus. Groupthink encourages conformity in social networks and echo chambers. The overconfidence effect leads people to be more certain than their accuracy warrants. Halo and pitchfork effects make impressions in one domain skew judgments in another. Stereotyping lets membership in a group unjustly affect how we treat claims from its members. Bennett's advice is practical. Notice the emotions attached to a claim, practice separating the claim from the claimant, and when possible, bring a mindset that is passionate about discovering the truth rather than validating an identity. Once you have a check on your internal distortions, you move to the work of disambiguation, teasing clarity out of fuzzy language and hidden assumptions. Rule 3 insists you isolate the actual claim. Bennett makes an observation that is deceptively simple, but devastatingly important. Many online arguments are fights over claims that were never made. Implicit claims are common. A sarcastic phrase or a meme often implies assertions that are never stated. Before refuting or supporting a claim, ask what exactly is being claimed. Don't build straw men. Distinguish explicit claims. Clear statements like, "The sun is about 93 million miles from the earth," from implicit claims that require inference, such as, "Are you really going to wear that?" which implies a negative judgment about a person's clothing. When a claim is implicit, solicit clarification. If you cannot, make your assumptions explicit so you aren't arguing against ghosts. Rule 4 presses you to define each relevant term clearly and precisely. Words carry many meanings. Climate change is a hoax is a perfect example. Which part of climate change? The warming of the planet? The human contribution? The seriousness of the predicted consequences? The word hoax itself ranges from not real to a deliberate, organized deception. By forcing precise definitions, you can convert vague assertions into propositions that can be tested or debated sensibly. Two people may be arguing right past each other because they mean different things by the same words. Rule 5 demands that the words you use reflect the scope and degree of your claim accurately. Scope tells us who or what is included. All men, some men, many men. And degree quantifies how strong a claim is. A sweeping statement like "all men are bastards" is easy to falsify if you define bastard narrowly, while "some men are bastards" is functionally unfalsifiable in practice, but a weaker claim in rhetorical terms. Bennett recommends replacing vague quantifiers with numbers or percentages when possible. Based on my experience, about 30% of men are bastards. It's clumsy but clearer and more testable than "men are bastards." This precision matters in real-world debates, as Bennett demonstrates with COVID-19 examples. When President Trump said in March 2020 that the virus was very contagious, but we had tremendous control of it, that second phrase overstated the degree of control. Media critics responded with the opposite extreme: no control at all. The truth lay between the extremes. Calibrating scope and degree helps avoid misleading rhetoric and prepares an audience for evidence-based argument. Rule 6 introduces operationalization, a scientific habit of making concepts measurable. If you want to test whether isolation causes depression, you must operationalize isolation and depression. What counts as isolation? How long? Is internet access allowed? Which assessment instrument measures depression? Self-reports like the Beck Depression Inventory, clinical diagnoses, or observable behaviors. Bennett's point is practical. You don't need laboratory-grade definitions for everyday reasoning, but you do need a benchmark. Operationalization matters most when claims involve loaded language or legal and moral categories. He gives an instructive vignette. A man touches a woman's lower back, and the woman claims she was sexually assaulted. If the parties define sexual assault differently, their reactions range from a need for an apology to calls for imprisonment. Here, Bennett introduces a technique he calls reductio ab consequentia. Test a definition by considering its consequences. If your definition of sexual assault excludes cases most people would agree are assault, it's too narrow. If it sweeps up non-problematic behavior, it's too broad. Operationalization is not about finding one correct standard, but about choosing measurable criteria, then using if-then logic to explore implications. Rule 7 insists that claims be falsifiable when possible. Falsifiability is a principle borrowed from philosophy of science. A claim that can be shown false by evidence is preferable because it allows disconfirmation and thus real learning. The world will end on December 21, 2012 is falsifiable. The date passed and the claim was demonstrably false. The world will end after 1,000 years of peace, however, is functionally unfalsifiable in one human lifetime. The world will end when God wants it to end is virtually unfalsifiable because it relies on opaque divine intention. Unfalsifiable claims are weak because they provide no route to refutation. They are the currency of pseudoscience, mysticism, and certain political or marketing rhetoric. If someone insists on an unfalsifiable claim, Bennett recommends asking them to modify it into a falsifiable form. But be realistic. People motivated to believe will often rationalize a falsification away. Still, asking for a falsifiability criterion is a productive move, even if it doesn't convert a believer. Rule 8 tackles the language of certainty. Public life prizes confidence. Critical thinking prizes appropriate skepticism. Bennett advises distinguishing possibility, plausibility, and probability. It is possible that 2 million Americans will die of COVID-19 is often a vacuous statement if possible merely means we can imagine it. Possibility is only meaningful when it has been demonstrated or when there is an established mechanism. Plausibility is subjective. Something may seem reasonable to you. Probability, by contrast, is mathematical and evidence-based. When making claims, use the right term. If your belief is an educated estimate, express a probability or at least a level of confidence that corresponds to evidence. Avoid "it could happen" as a rhetorical device meant only to sow doubt. Bennett also notes an important cultural point. Leaders are rewarded for certainty, but in scientific and public health contexts, humility about uncertainty is often the more responsible stance. The third phase, embrace the continuum, is an antidote to binary thinking. Many of our errors arise from simplifying complex phenomena into either-or categories. Rule 9 reduces claims of simple causality by converting causes to contributing factors where appropriate. Few social, economic, or medical outcomes have single causes. Saying the economy suffers because citizens prefer handouts, or violent crime exists because humans are naturally violent, collapses complex interactions into a single villain. More precise reasoning acknowledges contributory factors. One of the reasons the economy is struggling is that some citizens are disengaged from work, is less rhetorically satisfying, but truer and less likely to mislead. Bennett's goal is not to escape responsibility and causal thinking, but to arrive at nuanced, defensible claims that can be examined and falsified. Rule 10 addresses analogies, one of the most powerful and treacherous tools in reasoning. Analogies help us understand unfamiliar situations by comparing them to known ones, but they can also mislead if the comparison is vague or if the similarities are superficial relative to the differences. Bennett gives a taxonomy of pitfalls, false equivalence claims that two things are the same when the comparison ignores crucial differences, ambiguous analogies that make comparisons without explaining how they are similar, and weak analogies that are dissimilar in too many or too important ways to be instructive. He stresses that analogies are claims in themselves and should be evaluated like any claim. Specify the way things are similar, consider the degree of similarity, and test the analogy's consequences. He gives memorable examples, comparing a president who orders a military strike that kills civilians to a mass murderer may highlight a shared characteristic, responsibility for deaths, but is likely to be a false equivalence regarding legal culpability. The stop and frisk saves lives, so ban cars because that would save even more lives, example functions as a reductio ad absurdum. It shows that saving lives alone cannot be the sole criterion for policy. Bennett emphasizes thresholds. In practice, we must often make binary policy decisions, and we accept or reject analogies relative to a threshold determined by their plausibility and stakes. Rule 11 is a final exhortation to be recursive. Filter all relevant assumptions through the rules themselves. Claims are often nested. Zeus' lightning bolt fuels the sun may pass superficial scrutiny if you acknowledge your ignorance and define terms, but it contains an embedded assumption, Zeus exists, that itself needs examination. If a claim depends on other claims, unpack them and run each through the 11 rules. Some assumptions are self-evident and needn't be overchecked. No reasonable person suspects the sun doesn't exist, but others are foundational and must be interrogated. To make these rules concrete, Bennett works through a few extended examples. A bumper sticker claim, "Guns don't kill people, people kill people," is revealed as ambiguous and in need of clarification. Is the claim legal, empirical, or moral? By isolating the claim and asking follow-up questions, you can recast it into a stronger, more precise claim, such as, "Stricter gun laws violate the Second Amendment." Then you can operationalize violate and Second Amendment, examine falsifiability via courts, and unpack assumptions about what kinds of arms fall under constitutional protection. The process converts a throwaway slogan into a debatable legal claim. Bennett also examines an analogy circulating during the early days of the COVID-19 pandemic, flattening the epidemiological curve compared to a parachute slowing a fall. A good analogy in this context must clarify whether flattening the curve means healthcare capacity is safe or only temporarily under control, whether lifting restrictions means all at once or selectively, and whether taking off a parachute mid-air is more similar to lifting restrictions while infections persist than taking off a parachute after you have landed. The better analogical claim recognizes contributing factors and scope. It is plausible and instructive to compare lifting restrictions to removing a parachute mid-air if restrictions are the primary safeguard against an otherwise overwhelming wave of infections. But the strength of the analogy depends on precise definitions and operationalization. What counts as flattened, and what thresholds for reopening are acceptable. The analogy is more useful when specific similarities and differences are spelled out. Faith-based claims receive careful, respectful scrutiny. Prayer's work is too broad to be useful. Bennett shows how to narrow the claim, asking, for instance, whether petitionary prayer to a Catholic saint produces statistically significant improvements compared to control groups, and how operationalization and falsifiability turn such religious assertions into testable hypotheses. If the proponent insists that a saint healed someone through God's power, the claim becomes unfalsifiable and hence a dead end for scientific evaluation. The practical compromise is often to separate the question into two parts. Does the act of petitionary prayer correlate with improved outcomes? And if so, what mechanisms, psychological placebo effects, social support, or supernatural intervention might explain it? Only the first question admits to empirical testing. The second quickly collapses into metaphysical claims that, if specified as divine causation, are often unfalsifiable. Throughout the preface and opening chapters, Bennett returns to two guiding principles. First, strengthen claims by making them clearer, narrower, and more testable. The quality of a claim is measured by its clarity and precision, not by its truth. Second, cultivate intellectual humility and manage your biases. These moves are mutually reinforcing. Humility makes you more likely to define terms, ask for operational measures, and prefer falsifiability. Clarity makes it harder to hide behind rhetoric or motivated reasoning. Bennett also makes several smaller but potent points. When probability is unknowable, as with claims about miracles or extremely rare historical events, Bayesian methods can help, but they begin with prior assumptions that are themselves biased. The principle of parsimony, or Occam's razor, advises selecting the claim with fewer assumptions when probabilities are unknowable. Competing claims that are not mutually exclusive should be understood as such. Saying that something caused the universe is not logically inconsistent with saying a god caused the universe, but the more parsimonious claim is usually the more plausible absent additional evidence. Loaded language and rhetoric must be operationalized if they are to be discussed meaningfully, and analogies and causal claims will almost always rest on implicit assumptions that must be made explicit and evaluated in turn. In closing, Bennett offers readers a checklist, the 11 Rules of Reason, intended as a practical toolkit. Acknowledge your limits, explore your biases, isolate the claim, define terms precisely, use appropriate scope and degree, operationalize terms when possible, make claims falsifiable when possible, express meaningful levels of confidence, convert causes to contributing factors, craft analogies carefully, and subject hidden assumptions to the same scrutiny. The preface makes clear that you do not have to memorize these rules or apply them in strict order. Repeated practice will make them second nature. But used deliberately, they will turn ambiguous shouting matches into productive evaluation and make your own claims stronger and more defensible. The voice of the book is candid and conversational, mixing personal anecdote with philosophical insight and practical examples. Bennett does not promise a miracle cure for all reasoning problems. He promises, credibly, that by taking these rules seriously, you will get better at making claims that can be tested and at discerning which claims warrant your attention. The aim is civic as much as individual. Better claims, better debate, and healthier democratic discourse. If you leave the preface with one takeaway, it is this. Clarity is the precondition of disputability. A claim that is clear and precise is easier to test, easier to challenge, and therefore more useful than a rhetorically powerful, vague assertion. Reasonable people disagree, but they can disagree productively, and agreeing on the meaning of words, the scope of claims, and how to measure them is the first step toward that productive disagreement. Follow these rules, and you will not only avoid many common errors of thought, you will also be in a position to learn when you are wrong, to change your mind, and to contribute to conversations that actually lead to better outcomes.